All right, so we're moving on into Hill and Parakeet tests, and we're going to discuss some key points, some key philosophical ideas through the Tehillim. And we're going to go slow, and we're going to do the Rishonim, and we're going to try to analyze. So let me just do a Chazara from last time. That way we get everybody on the same page. So the last time we spoke about Tehillim, the basic summary of what we spoke about was Shevach on nature in general, and the sun in specific. And we said that the Tehillim transitions from Shevach on nature and the sun into Shevach on Torah. And I don't know if anybody remembers, but two ideas that the Radak says in terms of explaining that transition are that one idea is that mankind is dependent on nature, on the heavens and on the sun. So just like man is dependent on the heavens and the sun, so too man is dependent on Torah. And the other idea is that the two areas of Chachma, of God's wisdom, which are our greatest in terms of learning about God from, are nature and Torah. And the last idea we said was from the Pasuk, Torah Sashem Tmima. So we said that according to Rashi, quoted the famous Pasuk from Mishle, Ki Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or. And we said the idea of Ner Mitzvah V'Torah Or is that Or is light, which allows man to see things clearly, and Torah allows people or man to see things clearly, and ner mitzvah ner sustains that light. So too with mitzvos. If a person just has Torah, if a person just enjoys learning Torah because it's like a chess game, if a person just enjoys it for the intellectual, so he won't be able to sustain the clarity of thought that he gains from the Torah, and you need mitzvos to really perfect the person's emotions and instincts in order to really sustain the benefits of Torah. Okay, so now we're ready to move on. So I brought in source sheets. Everybody on the phone, you could take out your Tehillim Parakeet tests. And as always, please feel free to stop me if you have any questions or if you have any ideas. So I'm just going to call on you to read. If you don't want to read, it's fine, okay? And I will read. I don't mind. So we're just going to go around the table. Sabina, you want to read first?
What are we reading?
All right, so number one. So the first idea we're going to take up or we're going to focus on tonight is really an idea that emerges from three psukim, the three main psukim. So I just want you to read the pasuk is Parak Yud Tes, Pasuk Ches, Tes, and Yud. So Sabina is going to read out loud for everybody.
Torah Hashem Timima, Machshevet Nefesh, Edor Hashem Ne'emana,
Machimas.
Petty.
Okay, good. So the first pasuk, just a literal translation, is that the Torah of Hashem is perfect, is tamim, meshivas nefesh, it restores the soul, edus Hashem nemana, the testimony of Hashem is trustworthy, machkimas pesi, so it makes the simple wise. And we said last time, just one more note, is that what it means to make the simple wise is that a lot of times a person gains a methodology of thinking from Torah. Like you see a lot of guys, I was thinking about this on the carway here, but you see a lot of people who go into law school. So a lot of yeshiva guys have a huge advantage when it comes to the LSATs, because when a person learns Torah, he gets so used to thinking in a purely logical, rational way that a lot of times it makes it much easier to study for the LSATs. And in fact, many law schools like the fact that if you go to yeshiva and you study Torah, they like it. It's a benefit to going to law school. So you see that that even if a person doesn't have the raw tools, if a guy learns or if a woman learns, so they gain a method of thinking and a logical step-by-step approach. Okay, fine. So continue reading, Miriam Clark, next pasuk, please.
Okay. Because Dei Hashem Yisharim Mishmichei Lev.
Misamchei Lev.
Misamchei Lev. Mitzvot Hashem bara mira inayim.
Okay, translation. So Pekudei Hashem, so the orders or the commandments of Hashem are Yesharim. They're upright and they make the heart of man happy. Mitzvot Hashem bara miras inayim. So the mitzvot of Hashem, his commandments, are bara, they're clear, and they open up and they allow light to come into the eyes. Okay. Now we're just going to read one more pasuk and then we're going to come with a couple of questions and try to analyze the idea. All right, so pasuk yud, Alana.
Yira Hashem Tehura Omedet La'ad Mishpatei Hashem Emet Tzedku Yechdav.
Okay, so the Yira, the fear of Hashem is Tehura, is pure, which is pure, is Omedet La'ad, it lasts forever. Mishpatei Hashem, the Mishpat of Hashem, the Din of Hashem, is Emes Tzadku Yachtov. It is truth and righteousness together in one. Okay, so anybody who has the source sheet noticed that I bolded certain words, and I did that on purpose. So if you read Rashi, the Rashi on Pasuk Tes, it starts with Bara. Now we're going to get into the heart of this Pasuk, or of these Pesukim. So, Racheli, you want to read?
Sure, the Rashi?
Yeah, Rashi. Number two.
Bara, clear. It's a heret.
Good.
What does that mean?
It means it shines. It shines. Okay, go on.
Torah's Adius Bekude, Mitzvah Yeras Mishpate.
Mishpate, okay.
Shisha Kneged, Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Ubin Kol Shem B'Shem, Hamisha Tevot. Hashem, Atzmo, Keneged Hashem, Keneged Hey, Chumshei Torah.
Okay, good.
Emet,
okay, good. So, translation. So, there's six words. I bolded them in these three psukim. There's the word Torah, there's the word Edus, there's the word Pekude, there's the word Mitzvahs, Yiras, and Mishpate. So, those six words in those three psukim, which I bolded on the source sheet. So Rashi's saying that they represent something. What do they represent? They represent the six Sidrei Mishnah. So you have six major books of Mishnah. And there's five words in between. So if you count Hashem, for example, in Pasuk Ches, Hashem, Tmima, Meshivas, Nefesh, Edus. That's five. So he's saying that the five words in between are represent the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the five books of the Torah. And then he ends, Rashi ends with a funny thing. He says, V'chusam besofan, so at the end of all the psukim, it says, Emes Tzadku Yachtov. So Rashi explains that, Kulam Yachad Mesukonim V'chesed V'emes. They're all together with Chesed and Emes. Okay? So, so obviously at the beginning of Rashi, just to explain Rashi a little bit, so Rashi's explaining that these words encompass the whole Torah. So you have Torah, you have Edos, you have Kude, you have Mitzvos, Yorsa Mishpate. And you see from Rashi that he's just referring to two aspects of Torah, the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah Shebichsav, and he's saying that they're both interwoven with one another. So there's a relationship, obviously, between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav, and you can't have one without the other. Like a classic example of that is, you see by like tefillin. If you just had the Torah Shebichsav of tefillin, you'd have no idea what tefillin looked like at all. Because it says, Vahula Osa Edecha. So you might think that's a tattoo, or you might think that a person has to draw a sign on his arm. So both, you need both. You need this. You need the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, and you need the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. All right. Bless you. Okay. So, but at the end of Rashi, the Rashi says that everything was placed together, Bechesed V'emes. So what do those words mean, Chesed V'emes? So anybody want to give it a shot? What does Chesed mean?
Kindness.
Good, kindness. And what does MS mean?
Truth.
Truth, okay, good. All right, so I just want to show you from the Torah that this phraseology is used in another area. So look at number three in Bereishis. Parak Mem Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Tes. So you see the words Chesed V'emes in another area. Yes. Question?
Yeah, question on the Rashi.
Yeah, no problem.
You know the song that they have the 10 numbers and like everything stands
one.
For... Yeah, one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do they get 5 and 6 from here?
What? No.
I just came up with that.
Well, they say 5 is the Torah, right? And six.
Right, because it says...
I don't really sing that song on Pesach, so I'm not the best person to ask. But, no, but the general... What's... What? The question is, what's Chesed V'emes? Which...
asking Hashem to forgive us.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's breaking up.
Oh, okay. Let me move the phone closer. Is this better?
Now it's great.
Okay.
No, Lisa was complaining about that too.
Oh, really? Maybe it's because... let me move the phone. I'm going to move the phone closer so that everybody can hear better. Okay. All right. So the question that we're raising now... Oh, sorry. Yeah, in the Yud Gimel Yikar.
Yeah.
Yeah, what were you saying?
I'm sorry. I don't know if there's significance that...
Oh, yeah. We do say it in the Yud Gimel Yikar. Yes. But I was... thinking about it in another area, but that is a good point. I actually went there first. That was what came into my mind first, but I didn't get a clear idea of what it meant from there. But I got a clear idea of what I think Rashi means from a different area. So if you look at number three, Nicole just came in, so she has to read. Number three.
ויקרבו ימי ישראל ללמוד, ויקרא לבנו ליוסף, ויאמר לו, אם נא מצאתי חן בעיניך, שים נא ידך תחת יריחי, ועשית עמדי חסד ואמת, אל נא תקברני במצרים.
Good. Okay, so what's this pasuk referring to? Yaakov. So Yaakov is telling Yosef, please do with me chesed v'emes and do not bury me in Mitzrayim. So if you look at Rashi on that pasuk, where it uses the same phraseology that Rashi uses over here of chesed v'emes, so what does he say, number four? So he says chesed v'emes. Chesed she'osin im hamesim hu chesed shel emes. So chesed that is done with dead people is a chesed shel emes. Why? She'enu mitzapeh l'tashlum gemul. So a person, he doesn't expect anything in return. So the term chesed shel emes is usually used in reference to doing a chesed with a mace. And here by Yosef's chesed to Yaakov after he died was to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. But you see, actually, I brought in the Rambam in number 5. The Rambam is from Hilchos Avel, Perek Yudalad, Halacha Zayin. This concept of Chesed Shel Emes actually presents itself in practical halachic terms. So where does it present itself? So Sabina's going to read number 5.
Nir Ali Shenachmet.
Shenachamas Avelim.
Shenachamas Avelim. Kodem.
The Bikur Cholam. Okay, go on.
Shanachum Avelim Gamilut Chasad Im Chayim V'im Hamit.
Good. Alright, so what's the Rambam saying? So the Rambam says that if a person has a choice between visiting a sick person or doing Nichum Avelim, which means obviously going to somebody's house and paying a Shiva visit, so what should a guy choose or what should a woman choose? They should choose Nichum Avelim. So why? Because he says the reason is because it's called it's chesed with a mesim. So that takes precedence. Chesed with mesim and chayim takes precedence with just chesed with somebody who's alive. And the chesed of the mes by Nichum Avelim is that you're really expressing kavod, you're expressing respect for the mes by giving Nichum Avelim to those who are mourning. So how do we apply this concept in Rashi to what he means with regard to the general connection between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav, which was stated in number 2. So perhaps, based on this definition of Rashi, of Chesed V'Emes, the idea is that when a person understands or views Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav as a unit, they shouldn't have in mind that God needs us to do it. In other words, a lot of times a person thinks that God, he needs our prayers, or he needs our mitzvos. And we do say it's Ratzon Hashem, it's God's will that man do mitzvos and man keep Torah. But to assume that God's doing it for something in return, that he needs something in return, is a falsity and is not true. So when he says, Kulam Misukonim b'chesed v'emes, perhaps Rashi, being consistent with his own pshat in Bereishis, means to say that when Hashem constructed the Torah, he didn't expect anything in return. It's true that he punishes us. Why does he punish us when we do something wrong? It's not because he is personally hurt by it, but it's because it's for our benefit that he punishes us. He wants us to do tshuva, and he wants us to live the happiest life. So perhaps the idea of chesed v'emes is an idea of not expecting anything in return. It's true, it's God's will, but he doesn't need it. And I was thinking of two examples on the car ride here, which really that we deal with on a daily or on a weekly basis or very often, which really illustrate these ideas. One is the idea of the thank you card. So like a lot of people, obviously it's a good thing to give a thank you card and it's appreciative, it's hakar satov. But a lot of people that I'm sure everybody's met, they get upset if they don't get a thank you card. So that lacks in terms of chesed shel emes. Because the person who gives a gift, they don't expect anything in return. That's a chesed shel emes. They're not doing it for their own personal motivations or their personal satisfaction, but they're doing it purely for the other person. So too by Hashem. He does. He gave us the Torah purely for us. He doesn't need anything from us in return. But the other example, which is common also, is meals, like on Shabbos, or I don't know about in Yeshiva, but it's very common where I live that when you invite somebody over, it's expected that they invite you back. Well, I don't expect it. And for everybody out there, don't invite me back. But in general, there's like this expectation that, or there's also an expectation of a gift. And I know that like women get upset oftentimes when they invite like a younger, a single yeshiva guy and they don't bring anything with them. So it makes sense. It makes sense. All right, nobody here gets upset. But a lot of women that I know get upset when somebody doesn't bring a gift. But the idea is that lacks in terms of Chesed Shel Emes. Because the idea of Chesed Shel Emes is that a person invites another family over, another person over, because it's pure kindness. They don't expect anything in return, and they're not going to be insulted if they don't get anything in return. Okay, so I thought those two examples really illustrate the idea in the Tehillim. Okay, anybody have any questions on that Rashi? Okay, but another idea of Chesed Emes, perhaps, is that if you look at the Radak in number 6, so Miriam is going to read number 6.
V'lo kei mishpatei Hashem, ela emet tzedzku yachdav, v'lo machishim zedzah.
All right, so what's machishim zedzah? They don't contradict one another. So normally a person, I'm going to use the term chesed, so tzedek and chesed are similar, but the idea is that normally a person thinks that chesed and emes contradict one another. Why does a person think that? Why do these concepts contradict one another? What does MS usually reflect about a person? It usually reflects a certain cold-heartedness, right? It's like an intellectual, like a person who just cares about his brain is truthful. And Chesed is usually an expression of emotion, right? I feel like I want to help this person. So normally, or very often, there are times where those two concepts do contradict one another. Like, I'm going to give you an example. If you know somebody who's using money to buy drugs, for example. So, on the one hand, you feel like it's chesed, and emotionally it would be kind to give that person money to help them out. But a chesed shel emes means that the truthful part of you recognizes that that's just pure emotion. And that the truthful part of it actually qualifies the chesed as a truer chesed. It would be inappropriate, even though it would be an expression of kindness, of chesed, of an emotional kindness, to give to somebody who can't help themselves, or who's a drug addict, for example, but that would lack in terms of chesed v'emes. Because emes really must qualify chesed. It can't just be pure chesed, but it has to be a chesed that makes sense, that's rational. So maybe that's another idea, just to explain this idea in the Mishpatei Hashem, but in Torah in general, that the idea of Chesed Emes is one of the key foundations or fundamental principles in Torah, and the idea is that a person has to recognize that there's somewhat of a limit on a person's Chesed. He can't just do Chesed whenever he feels like doing Chesed. Okay. Any questions? So that's the first idea that we're going to discuss tonight, the idea of Chesed V'Emes, expressed in Tehillim. So the next is we're going to just go through three psukim now, and each pasuk we're just going to analyze and maybe give one or two small ideas. And then one of the main key points that we're going to discuss is Yiras Hashem, which is coming up. So the next pasuk is number 7. Ilana Har is going to read number 7, if that's okay with her.
Mm-hmm. All right. Pikudei Hashem Yishorim Mitzam Chilev Mitzvah Hashem Baram Ira Inayim.
Good. So Pikudei Hashem Yisharim, we said that commandments of Hashem are upright. Misamche lev, they make a person happy. Mitzvahs Hashem baram iras inaim. So the mitzvahs of Hashem, they're clear and they enlighten the eyes. Okay, what does that mean? What is Pekudei Hashem? Okay, so Racheli is going to read number 8.
Pekudei Hashem, hayni mefarshim Pekudei mitzvot kodargibo. Ela she'amar aharkein mitzvah Hashem.
Okay, go on. So he's saying that really you would think that Pekudei is mitzvos, but it says mitzvos later on in the pasuk, so it can't be exactly the same. The Tehillim would be redundant. The pasuk would be redundant, so it must be referring to some other concept. So go on.
Okay. L'pikach nifarish Pekudei mikzeirat v'haya ha'ochal l'pikadon from Bereishit.
Okay, go on.
Shehu inyan ha geniza v'ha hanacha.
Okay, so what does that mean? What's a pikadon? Anybody know what a pikadon is?
Deposit.
Collateral. Yeah.
Collateral, good. Collateral. So a pikadon is something, if you lend somebody money, so they can give you collateral to hold on to in case they don't pay back. So, and he says it's the lashon of geniza. Anybody know what geniza is? Geniza is like burying. It means like storing something. Like we say that after you put shemos, for example, in geniza, or you bury a sefer Torah when it's worn out. So it's geniza v'hanacha. Hanacha means placement. So what's this idea? What's this concept of mitzvah? That it's place, that it's geniza, it's gonez. So go on. Rachel is going to keep reading.
V'heim ha'dvarim sh'ha'kol mora lehem. V'amar
sh'heim sh'ha'seichal.
Oh, sh'ha'seichal mora lehem.
So the intellect of a person, it's referring to mitzvos, in which the intellect of a person really is mora lehem, which is, it means like it's clear to his seichal. It's clear that to his seichal that these mitzvos are true and make sense. Go on.
Sh'heim yisharim, that they're just or straight.
Yeah, they're upright.
In Bahem Niftal Vakash.
There's no corruption in the mitzvos.
Sheim Loha Yukane, Loha Yahasechal Morelehem.
Right. If that were not the case, right.
Then the mind wouldn't
that. Exactly, the mind wouldn't justify it, okay?
Umizehatam Hey Masam Kaylev. Kiyachacham Yismach Al Sikhlo.
Good.
So that's why it says about them that they make the heart happy, because a wise person is made happy.
Good.
By his mind.
Okay.
The kasher yigvar al haguf v'yinhagho v'darko haseichal ein simcha ba'olam kesimcha hahi v'yisimcha ha'nefesh l'fikach amar mesamchei lev.
Okay, good. All right, stop. Okay, good. Very good. So the question on the Radak is, the Radak saying that Pekudei Hashem is referring to mitzvos where a person's mind sees that they're clearly beneficial to him, and he sees why God commanded us in these mitzvos. But he uses the term Pekudei, which is a reference to Pikadon, which is like, he says it's Geniza, it's something that's stored inside the mind of a person. So what is this reference of storing inside the mind of a person? So I just want to elaborate on the Radak. So maybe the Radak, unless anybody else wants to, why does it use the term Pekudei? How does that relate to mitzvos, the idea of pikadon, the idea of a collateral, or like he says, hanacha, placement, or gniza, storing? So the idea is that, I think the idea that Radak's saying is that mitzvos become internal, they become part of the person. So you see, like, a lot of times, you see this outside of mitzvos, like with a job, classically. Like a person has, with any job, when a person's been doing the same thing for like years, it becomes part of him. He doesn't have to think about it. It just becomes part of who he is. And when he's like when he's approached by, let's say like a doctor, for example. So my father's a doctor. He's a neurologist, and he's been practicing for like 30, 40 years, I guess. And when he sees patients, I mean, rarely does he see something that's unusual. And he usually when he sees patients, it's automatic at this point. So the idea is that mitzvos too, that there are certain mitzvos that a person naturally internalizes. The mitzvos that make sense to a person, they have the ability to become part of the person's essence, part of the person's seichel. So the idea of using the phrase pekudei, of pikadon, of like a collateral, which refers to gniza, like storing, and hanacha, is an idea that it becomes part or stored in man's mind, meaning it becomes part of man. He is automatically attracted to doing mitzvos. So the Tehillim is giving shevach on that aspect of mitzvos. Just like in regular life, if a person understands how to be a doctor properly, eventually it becomes part of his personality and part of the way he acts naturally. So too, by mitzvos, pekudei Hashem, mitzvos have the same potential. They could be part of a man or part of a woman. Okay, fine. So if we go on, just one more point in this Radak. So he says, mitzvos Hashem bara. So kol mitzvah u'mitzvah b'makom shehi hi bara v'zacha me'ein kol sig. So every mitzvah, where it is in its place, is clear and it has no extra, no refuse. Sig means refuse. So what is that idea? So the idea, what's the idea of a mitzvah not having any extra, anything extraneous? The idea is that mitzvahs have a lot of different particular components, and in mitzvahs there's no extraneous components to a mitzvah. Like we see, like in, I was thinking about another example in dreams, for example. So Chazal say that many times when a person has dreams, there are many parts of a dreams that, of a dream that are key to uncovering the meaning of the dream. But there are other aspects of the dream which a person, which we view as just simply like not important, not essential to the dream. So the idea, just background to the dream. So the idea by mitzvah is that's not the case. It's the opposite. Every single aspect of a mitzvah, if it's studied properly, has a certain purpose and a certain function. You can see that with any mitzvah, with mitzvah sukkah, with mitzvah lulav. Any single aspect of mitzvah actually is not inconsistent with one another, and every single mitzvah in particular has a purpose. And that's what I think the Radak means, ein kol sig. It has no refuse, meaning there's no part of it that's extraneous to the concept of the mitzvah. Okay, fine. So now we're just going to talk. I think I want to focus the main part on this next pasuk. So it's pasuk number Yud, and it talks about Yiras Hashem. So Nicole's going to read number 9.
Yiras Hashem tihura omedet la'ad mishpatei Hashem emet tzedko yachdo.
Okay, so the first part of the pasuk says Yiras Hashem tihura omedet la'ad. So fear of Hashem, Yiras Shemayim, Yiras Hashem, is tahor, is pure, and it lasts forever. So what does that mean? Somebody, what is Yiras Hashem? Elana, Racheli, what's Yiras Hashem? Define Yiras Hashem. Just basic.
Fear of God.
Fear of Hashem. So what does that mean, pure? What's a Yiras Hashem Tahora? What do you think of when you think of pure? How does a person... Well, we're going to get to this concept later, but how does a person purify themselves in the Torah in general? What process?
Mikvah.
Good. When mikvah is the main, yeah, mikvah is one of the main processes of tahara, of tahara. So we're going to get to how that fits into this pasuk. But the first idea is an idea in the Gemara. So the Gemara explains this pasuk openly, and we're going to have to analyze this Gemara. So the Gemara is number 9. So it says, Yiras Hashem Tahora Omedes La'ad Mishpatei Hashem Emes Tzadku Yachdav. Sorry, the Gemara is number 10. It's the Talmud Bavli Maseches Yuma Daf Ayin Beis Amud Beis. So it says, Yiras Hashem Tahora Omedes La'ad Amar Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina said, Ze Halome Torah B'Tahara. This is referring to a person who learns Torah B'Tahara. So Maihi, what is that? How do you learn Torah B'Tahara with purity? No Se Ishav Acharkach Lome Torah. So first marry a woman and then learn Torah. So why does that make, before we read Rashi, why would that make your Torah learning better, or Torah?
Because your impure thoughts, so to say, or your desires are going to be satisfied.
All right, good. So look at Rashi. Nicole got it right. So Nicole's going to read number Rashi. Rashi on that Gemara. So what does he say? Okay, so a person who gets married before they learn, so they're saved from hear her avera, which means fantasy, you know? So how is this Gemara interpreting the idea of Tahora? So the idea the Gemara is saying, it seems like, is that Tahora means the ability of a person to not be distracted and put all their energies into learning. So what does it mean, based on this Gemara, what does it mean, Yiras Hashem Tahora Omedes La'ad? So if a person learns Torah B'Tahara, it'll last them forever. So this is definitely the case, because it's not just the case with getting married, but it's also the case with college in general. I remember when I was in yeshiva for 6 years in total, and I was lucky enough to get 3 years off. It wasn't not consecutively, but first year, third year, sixth year. And 3 years I had to go to college. And I wasn't going to the most strenuous college, not the most strenuous college curriculum. But nevertheless, when a person's in college and they're in yeshiva, it takes away from their ability to focus on the yeshiva. And the idea is that when a person learns Torah in Tahara without any extra responsibilities, and he just can focus all his energies on Torah, it has the most lasting impression on the person. And I know this from a lot of guys that I spoke to who have been in yeshiva. They always say that the best years and the years that have had the greatest impact on their learning were the years that they didn't go to college. And certainly more so when you get married. I remember I went to yeshiva after I got married for a year. And that's definitely the best year, because Rashi's explaining that a person's drives are satisfied. And when a person's not distracted and they're able to dedicate all their energy into learning Torah, that's really lome Torah b'tahara. So that's really the type of Yiras Hashem, or the type of Limud HaTorah that really lasts a person's life. It doesn't mean that a person should abandon college, and a person can do both, and you can work and you can learn, but the idea is certainly that when a person has free time and they don't have the responsibilities of these things, so it definitely adds to the person's ability to learn. So that's Yiras Hashem Tahora. That's one idea of Yiras Hashem Tahora. But what's the other idea of Tahora? So we said that going to the mikvah, somebody said on the phone, but also somebody here said that going to the mikvah is really the process of Tahara. So I saw an idea over Shabbos that's related to Yom Kippur and Tshuva, but I'm actually going to see, hopefully apply that idea to this Pasuk, because I think it really has true application. So Alana Har, please read number 12. So this is actually, I saw this Pasuk, I think Rabbi Bald actually did this Gemara a couple, I don't know when, but I know I heard him give shir on this Gemara, and the Gemara that he gave shir on was in Rosh Hashanah, and in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah quotes a Pasuk from Eicha. And I saw, and I happened to have been doing this Gemara on Rosh Hashanah, and I happened to come across the Pasuk in Eicha and the Rashi, and I just thought of this idea, and I think it applies also to the Tehillim. All right, so Alana Har, go ahead.
Umidrash Rabbeinu, Nisal Vavenu Be'emet La'Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ke'adam Haruchetz Bini Kayon, Ke'piv Shemashlich, Mi'adav Kol Tinuf Kimodeh Ve'ozev Yerucham,
All right. So the pasuk says Nisa levavinu el kapayim el kel bashamayim. I think. So the idea is that a person has to lift up his heart to the sky, and to his Nisa levavinu el kapayim, to his hands. So Rashi quotes a medrash. The medrash says Nisa levavinu beemes. So our hearts have to be wholehearted and truthful. LaHakadosh Baruch Hu to Hashem. Ka adam haruchet benikyon kapav. So it's like a person who's washing his hands. Shemashlich miyadav kol tinuf. So a person, when he washes his hands, he removes all the dirt from his hands. Because it says in the Gemara, and the Rambam actually quotes this too, ki modeh ve'ozav yerucham. So a person who's modeh to his chait. So, and then he leaves his chait, he's ozev. This is an idea in tshuva. Yerucham, he will get rachamim, he will get mercy. V'hamodeh ve'eno ozev. But a person who's modeh and he doesn't leave his chait, ketovel v'sharet biyado. He's like a tovel v'sharet biyado. Does anybody know what that means? Tovel v'sharet biyado?
Like he stole some dirt, like bugs. Or
yeah, so sharet is I'm just going to call it a creepy crawly. So a creepy crawly is something that makes you tame. So if a person's holding on to the thing that's making him tame, when he's going to the mikvah is not going to work. But however, if a person's not holding on to anything, so the mikvah will purify the person. So I was thinking about this on Rosh Hashanah. Why does it use this analogy to equate to a person? Because it's equating it to a person doing tshuva. So the example that's being used is a person, let's say a person says, I'm a horrible person, I'm the worst person in the world, I never keep Shabbos, I never keep kosher. But if a guy does that, but he doesn't decide to leave his actions, and he doesn't decide, and he doesn't say to himself, I'm going to start keeping Shabbos, I'm going to start eating kosher. So that person who doesn't do that, so he's like a person who goes to the mikvah, but he's still holding on to his sharetz. So what is the idea? Why is there an analogy between the person who does tshuva in that way and the person who's tovel b'sharetz biyado? What is the analogy? So I was thinking about this on Rosh Hashanah. I think the idea of using tahara and tumah is that tumah occurs through attachment. You don't have to do an action necessarily to be tame. All you have to do is have your body attached to something that is tame, like a sheretz. If you're just touching, there's something called tumas maga. But if you're just touching a sheretz or you're just touching a mace, a dead person, you become tame. So the idea seems to be, how do we explain this idea? So the idea is that a person has to break their attachment to that which made him tame in order to become tahor, correct? The only way to become tahor is by breaking one's attachment to that which is tame. So too with chet. And I think this is a yesod in tshuva. So the idea by chet as well is that a person has to break his attachment to that which caused him to do chet in order to do real tshuva. For example, if a person says, I'm a horrible person and I never keep Shabbos, and then they decide not to keep Shabbos, but they don't analyze themselves and understand why they have this necessity to break Shabbos, So they haven't done Shuva Gemura. They're lacking. They're like a Tovel v'sharetz biyado. Why? Because they're still attached to the chait. The idea of Tshuva is that it demands a breaking of all attachments to chait. And that's why I think it says, Kimoda, see, that's why I think the Rashi, the Medrash, is saying that it's like a Tovel v'sharetz biyado. And the Rambam uses the same Lashon. Why? Because by sharetz, it's not a particular action that you have to break. It's an attachment. And a simple attachment to that which is tame is enough to prevent a person from becoming pure. So how do we relate this to Yiras Hashem? What's the relationship? So a lot of times a person's Yiras Hashem can be tied to something else. Like, give me an example of a person's Yiras Hashem being tied to something else. When does a person, sometimes a person's Yiras Hashem could be tied to Yiras Adam, for example. Like the Radak explains. So the idea is that when a person does something in private where nobody else is around, so it reflects the fact that a person's Yiras Hashem is really tied to Hashem alone and not tied to anything other than Hashem. So the idea of a Yiras Hashem Tahora, a pure Yiras Hashem, is a Yiras Hashem that is unattached to anything other than Hashem. Does that make sense? So let's look at the Radak. Racheli, you want to read the Radak? Okay. The Radak is number 13. The Radak is Tehillim Perek Yotes Pasuk Yud. So he explains the concept of Yiras Hashem Tahora.
Yiras Hashem Tahora. V'heim hadvarim shiyasa adam otam b'seiter obli da'at k'mo haganeva v'ziyuv hamidot v'hamashkalot v'adomim lahem.
Okay, so what is it referring to? It's referring to things that a person does in secret or without anybody knowing about. Like, for example, gneva, if a person steals. Or ziyuv hamidos means that a person, midos is weights, and mishkalos, they're different types of weights. So if a person, let's say a person's a butcher and they are messing around with their weights and they're ripping off other people, so if a person doesn't do that in private, that's considered Yiras Hashem Tahora. That is a pure Yiras Hashem. Go on.
V'him hadvarim shekatu b'hem v'yiratam alokecha ani Hashem.
Okay.
V'hayira hatahora me'ein sig. Ki hadvarim haraim shehim begaloi gimna adam ma'asota meyirat b'nei adam.
Okay, good.
V'heim hakesef ahu inu tahor ki yesh bo sigim.
Right.
Abal hadvarim shehim nistarim v'imna adam la'asota meyirat hakel levado hayira hahi tahora ki ein basigim.
Good. So the Radak is explaining the very concept that was just illustrated. He's saying, what's the telltale sign that a person has real Yiras Hashem? If a person's in complete private, and nobody else knows about what he's doing, and he still keeps the mitzvos, and he still prevents himself from doing avera, that is true Yiras Hashem. Why? Because it demonstrates that his Yiras Hashem is unattached to anything other than Hashem. So perhaps that's how the Radak's explaining the concept of Yiras Hashem Tahora. There's a furtherance of this idea, by the way. I just want to... Everybody knows, I'm sure yeshiva guys, they always use the term superego, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the most common term. So, like, does anybody know what that means? Like, the superego?
It's like your drive to do, like, the right thing. Like, to always do the right thing.
Yeah. So, a lot of times a person does, or feels compelled to do what's good based on an image of themselves. And that image, it emerges through how they were raised. And a lot of times the image comes from or stems from parents. So a lot of times a person does things that are compelled to do the right thing because they're afraid of breaking that image of themselves. Like a person feels like they have to be perfect. They have to keep mitzvos in order to satisfy that image of themselves. So I would just further, the Radak's not saying this, but I would just say that that's also a lack of Yiras Hashem. That's what, when yeshiva guys use the term superego a lot, they mean that you're doing it for your superego means that that's not the highest level of service. The highest level of service is not that a person does it because they feel like they have to be perfect because this image in their mind of themselves being perfect commands them to do it. But the idea is that a person recognizes that Hashem is the Almighty and they are small in Hashem's eyes and that's what compels them to do it. So that's really the highest level of service to Hashem, the Yiras Hashem Tahora. We're going to do that in the Rambam. And I just wanted to show you an interesting thing in the Radak. So go on. Let's see the Radak. I'm going to read the Radak inside, okay? So the Radak we're up to is Omedes La'ad. So he says, Ki yesh mitzvah sheyesh lahem makom uzman, v'hadvarim shehem b'yirash Hashem, heim omdim la'ad, ein lahem zman. So the one idea of lasting forever is an idea that there's no particular zman, there's no particular time period that Yiras Hashem is limited to. So you see from the Radak that he's explained that Yiras Hashem really permeates a person's whole involvement in Torah. When a person does any mitzvah, it's done. Yiras Hashem is a component in any mitzvah. If a person does lulav, a person does sukkah, a person does Shabbos, every mitzvah demands service from the standpoint of Yiras Hashem. Okay? And I just brought in this Radak, the end of the Radak, because he says an interesting thing. He actually noted, the Radak wrote a commentary on Tehillim. I don't know if you know this, but the Christians, a lot of times, they quote Tehillim very often to back up their idea of God. And actually, I was doing a clinical rotation when I was in graduate school, and I happened to have, my supervisor happened to be an evangelical Christian, like a very hardcore Christian. And she was trying to convince me that she knew what she was talking about. I didn't really want to get into discussions with her, but it ended up going that way. And she kept quoting these psukim from Tehillim. But the problem was that she couldn't read Hebrew. So that definitely I was trying to show her that because she couldn't read Hebrew, the translation of the psukim that she was quoting were just completely off. But a lot of the psukim that she was quoting were from Tehillim. That was the most common place that they quote Tehillim, psukim to prove their God from. Another thing that ended up happening also, just parenthetically, we had these discussions, and she used to say that we rely too much on the rabbis, like Jews. But I try to show her that if you don't have like Torah Shabbat Peh, like the Torah contradicts itself over and over again. Like I said to her, like they believe in the Trinity, but I said it says Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu, Shema Echad. So like if you don't have Torah Shabbat Peh, and the reason why they believe in the Trinity is because it says, a lot of times in the Bereishis, it uses a plural form to refer to God. And we have Chazals that explain why the Torah is using a plural form. So we rely on our Torah Shabbat Peh to explain the contradiction, but they have no Torah Shabbat Peh. So I try to show her that if you have no Torah Shabbat Peh, how do you choose to believe in one thing in the Torah and not the other thing? It shows you that there's a necessity for Torah Shabbat Peh. Because if you don't have it, there's complete contradictions in the Torah, all over the Torah. So the Radak actually wrote a whole commentary at many places refuting the Christians and trying to show how Tehillim is anti-Christian. So one idea is from this pasuk, Omedes La'ad. So if you look at the Radak inside, he actually refers to Christianity openly. He says, Omedes La'ad. So he says, Al Kol HaTorah. So on the whole Torah, Shalot Siva HaKel Bal Lizman. So the Torah was not fixed to a certain time period. Ella ad olamihi adhi, ad olme adhi. Sorry, it's forever. The Torah system is made forever for all generations. Velo kedivrei hakofrim hanotzrim. So it's not like those heretics who are the Christians. Sheomrim ki haTorah shenasna b'har Sinai hayala zman ad es ba Yeshu hanotzri. So it's not like the Christians who said that the Torah didn't have a time period or was only applicable to the time period until Yashki, the Notary, the Christian, came along. Ki adz mano haisa gufanis, umeisha ba hutziva lahavin osa ruchanis. So he wants to say, the Christians want to say, that until he came along, everything was literal. And then when he came along, he explained everything on a more spiritual, ruchnius type level. Vidivrehem divre ruach tova hevel. It's nonsense. It's garbage, what the Christians believe. Why? Ki ha mitzvo shehem omrim. Shehein b'derech mashal, v'lo yuvnu k'mashmon. The mitzvos that they say, that the Christians explain, are just parables. Hare akel tziva alehem b'feirush. The Torah says openly how to keep them, what they are. V'lo al derech mashal. It's not talking in derech mashal. Im kein sha'ara mitzvos lo yavin adam al derech mashal ki im k'mashmon. Okay. Ki im hayu ha mitzvos al derech mashal hayu ha mitzvos b'safek. If all the mitzvos were written as parables, you wouldn't know which mitzvos were true and which mitzvos weren't true. You can't approach mitzvos as saying that they're mishalim, that they're parables, because then you don't have a Torah system. Everything comes into doubt. Ze omer hadavar hanistar bo kachu. One person will say, this is the hidden meaning. Ve ze omer kachu. V'akasav Omer, but the pasuk says openly, Ki ha-mitzvah hazos asher anochi mitzavecha ayom lo nefles hi mimecha v'lo rechoka hi. So the pasuk says openly that the mitzvos that were given to you, they're not hidden from you. They're open, they're not far from you, and they're very accessible to you. So he really rips the Christians in this commentary, in this parish. So he's showing you that the Torah, you can't say that the Torah was set up for a fixed Zman. This is actually a big issue nowadays, because a lot of people, I've been having arguments with a certain family member recently about women rabbis. That seems to be a very popular argument that I keep having with a family member of mine. And her argument is that my argument is that a woman in general is better suited at raising a family, and it's the most important job. And one argument against women being rabbis, for example, would be that if a woman is going out into that position of leadership of the rabbinate, it takes away from her ability to function completely in the home. So that was one argument. So this certain family member of mine, she keeps arguing back that times have changed, you know, and women aren't necessarily suited better for raising children, but it's just because of generations and generations of persecution that women are like that. But really, Bizman Azeh, she wants to say that a man, or in the future, men will be just as suited. So she really denies the essential difference between a man and a woman. That's what it comes down to. But I keep arguing with her that either you say the Torah is for all generations or not. Because once you say that the Torah is not for all generations, it becomes a very flawed system. Because first of all, everything reflects on the fact that God gave the system. So if Hashem gave the system, if he gave it in a way whereby it wasn't capable of satisfying every generation and being applicable to every generation, it would be a lack in the system and therefore reflect a lack in God. So the idea is that a person, when they're studying the Torah system, they have to recognize that the Torah system is for all time, and it is applicable to all times. And that was just one example. Like, the idea that a woman intrinsically is different than a man is just one example of recognizing the fact that it's not a time, that's not a sociological factor. It's an idea in the inherent nature of a woman versus a man. And Hashem recognized that in giving the Torah system, and he gave it with that in mind. Okay. So now we're going to go on to the last pasuk tonight. Go on.
How do you then explain, though, like that as over the course of time, you know, different takana coming about or having, you know...
In terms of what? Like the takana, for example, of not having two wives was just practical, because it's not easy for a man to have two wives. And many men might think it's glorious to have two wives. But if you look at the Torah itself, Yaakov, you know, his wives were fighting. It's just not a pleasant situation to be in, and it's not good for the family. So anytime there's takana in general, it's for the benefit of the society. Like, there's usually... But give me a particular example of... Do you have any particular example in mind?
Then why wouldn't that be in the Torah to start with?
That wouldn't be... Because that's not intrinsically negative. It could be a good situation, but... So the Torah only deals with things that are intrinsically... And also, in an ideal society, the idea is that the Torah deals with intrinsically things that are harmful to intrinsically harmful things, and that's not intrinsically harmful, but it could be bad. So, in order to safeguard people, the Chacham come along and they protect society and they protect the Torah system.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the last pasuk that we're going to take up is pasuk Perek Yitas pasuk Yud Aleph. So it's a very interesting pasuk. I'm going to read it out loud. So it says, "Hanechmadim mizav umipaz rav umisukim kidvash v'nofes tzufim." So the Torah is more desired than gold and fine gold. Paz rav means fine gold. Umisukim midvash v'nofes tzufim, and it's sweeter than honey and the drippings of honeycombs. Okay. So what exactly does this mean? What is the why is Torah more beneficial or more desirous than money? Anybody want to give a possibility? What is it about money that's so great? Why does everybody desire, why does every man or woman desire money? Nobody wants money here?
To buy things.
To buy things, okay. Yes, a person wants money to buy things. They want money for security, very good. a lot of times, so money gives man a lot of, or satisfies a lot of psychological drives that a person has, correct? Men. Rabbi Sheet actually, Rabbi Sheet gave a shir on money, and it was one of the earlier shirim. So I'm not quoting him, but from what I remember of the shir, one of the ideas he wanted to say about money, the power of money, is that when a person acquires money, so oftentimes they think that they're more powerful and experts in other areas other than making money. Like, for example, like I was thinking about this example, but Donald Trump is the perfect example because the guy obviously is very successful in business, but there's this whole deal with him running for president. And I'm not saying that he didn't know anything about politics, but just because you made a lot of money doesn't make you qualified to go into politics. Or Rabbi Chait, I think, used this example. He used the example of school boards. So he said, who should be on the school board? People who have degrees in education and people who have experience in education. Why? Because they're the ones deciding the curriculum. They should be the ones evaluating the teachers. But many times you have people with a lot of money because they give a lot of money to schools on boards and making these decisions. So a person who has a lot of money, oftentimes, he may not be an expert in the area of education, but when a person has money, all of a sudden, they become an expert in everything. They become an expert in, it's true, they become an expert in politics, they become an expert in education. So the idea of money is that money, it satisfies a large array of psychological drives that a man has. So the idea of Torah, what's the idea of Torah being more desirous than money? So Torah actually has a better ability at satisfying those drives, that's what the Tehillim is saying, than money itself. Because there are, money does satisfy many drives, but Torah itself, it's not as fleeting as money, and it provides man with more security, and it provides man with more psychologically satisfying concepts. Like, for example, my father-in-law gave a shiur, a Shabbos shiur drasha, and he quoted a Gemara, and I don't remember where the Gemara is, but the Gemara says that a person shouldn't learn Torah for kavod. So you shouldn't learn Torah for the purpose of getting respect. Rather, what should a person do? He should learn Torah for itself, for its own sake, and then eventually the kavod will come, will follow. So what do you see? You see that Torah eventually, it's true, a person shouldn't have in mind to learn Torah for that because it's lo lishma, it's a lower level, but Torah does end up satisfying the drive for respect. It ends up coming in the end. So you see that Torah, it doesn't just make a person smarter, and it doesn't just make a person a better person, but it also gives a person an outlet and a satisfaction for other drives of a person, like the ego, the desire for respect, the desire for power. Now, the Tehillim is saying that Torah is more beneficial to man in that sense. What about Dvash? What does it mean? So what's the difference between, it says two things. It says, Hanechmadim mizav umipaz rav. So the Radak explains that there's two different ideas. There's zav, which is a lot. Yoser mizav umipaz. Hu hazav hatov anaki. So zav rav means a lot of gold, and paz rav is a finer gold. So what's the difference? So sometimes a person can have a wide array of psychological desires that they need to satisfy, but other times a person can have one desire that's stronger than every other, like the drive for respect, for example. So some people really need that. They need that. It's really strong in them. So the Tehillim is saying that it satisfies the person with that stronger, qualitatively stronger drive, and it satisfies the person with the range of drives. So the Torah is all-encompassing. It doesn't just focus on one drive, and it focuses on both quality and quantity. What about Dvash? What's unique about Dvash? What's the main component of Dvash, of honey?
Sweet.
It's sweet. So the idea of Dvash is that it really reflects pure instincts, right? It's not really, it doesn't satisfy you. It doesn't make you full, right? But the taste of it is very sweet. It sweetens the mouth. So the idea is, how do we relate this back to Torah? So the idea in reference to Torah is not only does Torah satisfy man's psychological drives, but it also satisfies man's instinctual drives. A person thinks that if they don't keep the mitzvos in the Torah, they'll be happier. But oftentimes, if a person is just led by their instincts to go wherever they want, they usually end up unhappy. So the idea is that the Torah and the mitzvos of the Torah provide man with more psychological and instinctual happiness than any other system, than dvash, which reflects pure enjoyment and pure taste and flavor, and money and gold, which really reflects psychological satisfaction. Okay, so we finished these psukim tonight, and we're just going to review the psukim. If anybody wants to help me with a review, I'm not going to go around the room if you don't want. Okay, so I'm just going to review. All right. So the main ideas of today's shiur, there are three main psukim that we focused on. One idea that we focused on was, well, the first Rashi that we said, we talked about Chesed V'Emes, the idea that Hashem doesn't need us to keep the Torah, but rather it's for our benefit purely. And another idea that we expressed is the idea of internalization of mitzvos, Pekudei Hashem. Then the third idea we talked about was Yiras Hashem Tahorah. And we really talked about different ideas in Yiras Hashem Tahorah. One idea being that Tahorah refers to the ability to not be distracted and focus all of one's energies on the area of the Torah itself. And the other idea we talked about was a person not attaching the Yiras Hashem to man, but attaching it purely to Hashem. And we skipped over the Rambam, but maybe we'll do it another time. And the last idea that we talked about was this idea of Zahav and Dvash. So the idea seems to be that Torah provides man with more satisfaction in the psychological realm than gold, which is the most satisfying psychologically. And Dvash provides man with more instinctual gratification than the sweetest thing in the world, which is reflected in the honey. Okay, so with that, I'm just going to conclude this year. Does anybody have any questions on this year? Anybody on the phone? All right, so everybody have a good night. Thank you for coming and listening. And I think, all right, so now I'm going to turn off the recorder.